Morning, Zoe. Got donuts.
Jeff Bridges, why are you still living above our garage?
Well, I dig the mattress, and I want to be in a T-Mobile commercial like you. Teach me, Sildana.
Oh, no, I'm not really prepared. I couldn't possibly. At T-Mobile, get the new iPhone 17 Pro on them. It's designed to be the most powerful iPhone yet and has the ultimate pro camera system.
Wow, impressive. Let me try. T-Mobile is the best place to get iPhone 17 Pro because they've got the best network.
Nice, Jeffrey.
You heard them. T-Mobile is the best place to get the new iPhone 17 Pro on us with eligible trade-in in any condition.
So, what are we having for lunch?
Dude, my work here is done.
With 24 monthly bill credits on Experience Beyond for well-qualified customers plus tax and $35 device connection charge. Credits end and balance due if you pay off earlier. Cancel finance agreement. iPhone 17 Pro, 256 gigs, $1,099.99 and new line minimum $100 plus a month plan with auto pay plus taxes and fees required. Best mobile network in the U.S. based on analysis by Ookla Speedtest Intelligence data 1H2025. Visit T-Mobile.com.
The WNBA playoffs are on the horizon, and Tommy Alter's The Young Man in the Three takes you deeper into the action. Join Tommy for exclusive WNBA insights as he links up with the league's biggest stars and dives deep into WNBA playoff matchups and analysis you won't hear anywhere else. The Young Man in the Three's WNBA playoff coverage is presented by Quest Nutrition. From irresistibly crunchy protein chips to rich chocolatey protein bars, these treats make giving in feel so good. Quest, big on protein, low on sugar, huge on flavor. Shop Quest on Amazon at amazon.com/QuestNutrition. And check out all the WNBA action on The Young Man and the Three wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Aces on the Air.
They got the bucket. A Turnbull came from the weak side and recycled the shot. A game-saving play by Turnbull.
The official podcast for Evansville Athletics.
Ground ball the right side. McGinnis Fields. He throws the first. They've done it! For the first time in program history, Evansville has won a regional. The Purple Aces are off to the Sweet 16.
Aces on the Air is brought to you by Taroni's Pizzeria and Brewery. Claim a $3 off voucher at any 2025-2026 UE Athletic event on campus.
The turn on to first. Two! A double play! And it's ball game! Evansville fans have won in 18 long years! For the first time since 2006, the Aces are Missouri Valley Conference Tournament Champions!
Every episode of Aces on the Air is available on Spotify, Apple, and online at GoPurpleAces.com.
Elevates on a three. It's an air ball. Wow. And the Aces have gone the road to Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky, and stunned the number one Wildcats 67-64. They shock college basketball this Tuesday night.
Now, here's the voice of the Aces, Jevin Redmond.
From the Purple Aces Sports Network, this is Aces on the Air, brought to you by Troni's and powered by Learfield. I'm Jevin Redman. Episode 43 this week features a behind-the-scenes look with men's basketball. We have four guests lined up as a lead-off with Joel Zemba, who is the Executive Athletics Director for External Relations, and also a new position kind of added on to his additional role, which is men's basketball general manager. We'll talk about that. We'll hear from Kai Bates Diop, who is the graduate assistant for sport performance coach, and then we'll dive into the head basketball manager Matthew Bunnell and the director of creative content Brandon Wall. So a lot to get to here in the next hour or so of Aces on the Air. And with that, Joel Zemba joins us. And we had Joel on last August or September it was when he first arrived at campus. And his title then was the Executive Athletics Director for External Relations. That's still true, but Joel, you have kind of a new responsibility added to your plate, and that is men's basketball general manager. Congratulations on that, and you know, we'll go into that here shortly, but I'm just curious kind of in your role. We worked together some, but just first year at UE, how did that go for you, and just some things you're proud of in the first 12 months?
Yeah, well, appreciate it, Jevin, having me on again. It's good to be back on here. It was a pleasure the first time, so thank you for that. You know, it's been an incredible opportunity. You know, it goes by quickly. The days sometimes feel long in the moment, but you know, when you get to the finish line, at least for that first year, the growth that our team has shown, not only externally but just the department overall, really proud of it. And you know, we'll have a few things that are, I guess you can say, you know, exposed down the pipeline in terms of accomplishments that we've had. Some of them have been put out already, but just really proud of what we've been able to do. And for myself, you know, personally, professionally, you know, family obviously is loving it here. Mm-hmm. It's everything that we expected it to be from a leadership standpoint, from a community standpoint. So I'm just excited to be in this next year and kind of capitalize on the things that we've done and achieve new heights as well.
And I think the one big thing, at least from my perspective, that's been an improvement, and look, we all know budgets are somewhat thin at our level, right, in terms of staffing, but I think we've done a very good job in terms of getting grad assistants in to do some work with sports. I know from like a social media perspective, coverage of games, that's something that has improved in your time here.
Yeah, 100%. And that was a goal when I first joined the team. Mm-hmm. Not only that Ziggy kind of set forth for the external team, but you know, your first few months is really just about learning the staff that you have, seeing the things that you do well, but also seeing kind of some gaps that you might be able to fill. You already kind of talked about, you know, the fiscal limitations that everyone kind of faces at times, but I'm really proud of how not only the group, but just the university has been able to kind of come together to help us fill certain positions that honestly didn't exist before. You mentioned kind of grad assistant positions, the volunteer positions, and I think a lot of that just has to do with the culture that we've built. People want to help us out. They want to join the team. They want to continue to push our initiatives forward. So, you know, we're in a really, really good spot, continuing adding new members to the external team. Creative content is a big thing, not only for our student athletes, but just for our fans as well. What you do and beyond really gives them insight into the student athlete experience and gets people excited about the year ahead. So we're in a good spot.
General manager for men's basketball. This is something that has developed in the new NIL era at other places as well in the past year, and it's new heading into this year. So just kind of take us through. Most fans, I'm sure, know what a GM is at the professional level, but speaking from the college level, what all does that entail?
Yeah, you know, it's obviously it's different wherever you are. Some places, you know, it's really getting in the weeds of the beginning to end when you talk about the recruiting. You know, some programs, the GM is really the one that identifies athletes, scouts them, brings them to the coaches. Essentially, you're convincing the coaching staff that you think they might be a good fit. But on top of that, you know, we always talk about the dollars that are involved now in this new environment. And that's where you can kind of say my role as a GM really comes into play, where, you know, understand the fiscal limitations from an NIL standpoint. I am involved in the, I wouldn't say the player analysis, but, you know, I appreciate Coach Rags that he allows me to kind of share my input when we are looking at certain guys. But really, when they come to campus, when we've secured trying to really get them here from a recruiting standpoint, being able to connect with families. Reality is, in this new environment, it can be a really honestly awkward conversation when coaches have to talk about, we really want your son here. We think they'd be a great fit. Oh yeah, this is the money portion. Mm-hmm. You know, and it could really just taint kind of that player-coach relationship, player-family relationship. So my role is kind of keep that, build a relationship with them, but also keep that clean, have tougher conversations that really the coaches can focus on X's and O's. This is where you fit from a development standpoint. And then I can reassure the families, yes, everything they're doing is accurate. Kind of be that conduit between the basketball side and the administrative side. And really, even from an overall program standpoint, helping Coach Rags from just managing the staff. Mm-hmm. But I also, you know, it does help that I spent a lot of time at Valpo with Coach Rags. We always talked about whenever he was going to be running his own program, and just being able to support him from that standpoint. So I wear a lot of hats in it, and I think that's unique to us, and I think it just works, you know, and it's something that we'll always reevaluate year by year as well.
You touched on the conversations with the, you know, recruit and their parents. Do most players now with the NIL, do they have agents? Are you dealing much with their agents?
Yeah, you know, it varies. A lot of times when you're dealing with international athletes, they will have an agent. You know, large part of that is just they may not have a lot of knowledge about the United States, and the agents has helped them navigate that even prior to them going to college, whether that's prep school or whatever it may be. So I think it really does vary. I think it's definitely increasing even from American players, just because the reality is families don't understand what is NIL, what's rev share, and what does that mean for our athlete. And also having, we talk about the tough conversations, it can be difficult for us to be having a conversation at times with a parent when you are pretty much putting a dollar amount on the value of their son or daughter in some instances. So I think from an educational standpoint, it started. Every agent is different. At the end of the day, it's a business. They understand that. And I think, I've been fortunate. The conversations I've had with agents have been very positive, very productive. Doesn't mean we get every single guy that we want or we're always reaching the terms that we need to. But I think the transparency standpoint with agents, that part's been good. Mm-hmm. And it's just good to create those relationships because you never know what's going to happen. You know, down the road, maybe we'll need each other again. You never know.
Are you involved much in the fundraising aspect in terms of NIL, whether it be meetings, outside of campus with donors or whoever else?
Yeah, I think my role is unique. Being executive deputy AD in the department, I've even prior to this GM role, I was always involved in donor events or, interacting with our donors at certain games and supporting Kelly and her staff and obviously Ziggy as well from a advancement standpoint. So I think that's helped me kind of navigate now into the transition of being able to speak about NIL and rev share where Ziggy thinks it's appropriate. So, it's not one of those things where I'm actively every single day going out and speaking to donors about, hey, this is what the program looks like. Can we get a little bit more support? This is the guy that we're thinking about bringing in. But it's being prepared for those conversations when they do come about, whether it be organically or, Ziggy pulls me into a conversation and I have more of an insight about what the program looks like day to day, which, maybe we'll touch on a little bit here. But I think it's just another perspective that donors are able to get to have a better understanding of the program without going to Coach Rags.
In terms of responsibilities in season versus out of season, obviously the recruiting is year-round for college coaches, but it becomes very heavy in the springtime once the season does end. So I guess, does your responsibilities vary much whether the season's going or whether you're out of season?
Yeah, obviously from my executive role, that's kind of just year-round. Mm-hmm. Once the year gets rolling, things get pretty crazy just with, multiple sports going on. Then you talk about when we have them going out at the same time and it can be a lot. But, from that standpoint, it kind of goes with the seasons. But I would say in terms of being in and out of season from the GM role, an interesting dynamic is as you start approaching the season getting rolling, the coach's attention, yes, we're always recruiting, but you really have to put an emphasis on the guys that we have at that time. Not only just from a development standpoint, but, ensuring that even everything that we promise them from an NIL standpoint, that we're capitalizing on that, because retention, even though it can be difficult in this new era, it still has to be a focus. We don't want to be in a position where we're turning over an entire roster every year. We've been fortunate to keep guys like Connor Turnbull, and others, that are kind of the staple of our program that gets our returners excited about returning, but also using that as a recruiting tool for guys that are coming in and saying, yeah, hey, we're not starting from scratch here. We do have a great foundation. So I will say, when we do bring in recruits as the season starts getting a little bit closer, and we'll be transparent with families and let them know, I know you need some time to evaluate and think if this is where you want to be, but we also are human. We also have to prioritize what's important, and that's one, supporting our athletes, but two, trying to get wins on the table here. So once the year gets close, that's kind of where our attention goes is the guys that we have on that roster.
You've been around this program here at Evansville for just over a year. You're with Coach Ragland at Valparaiso for a time. I know you followed from afar even before you got here to Evansville. If you're out talking to a recruit, their family, or even a supporter, how would you describe the current culture of this group? I know going into my eighth year calling the games, this is one of the most exciting groups, at least on paper, that I've been around heading into a season, and I think they have a real chance to compete mid to upper half the standings. But just in terms of overall current culture, how would you describe that to a supporter?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, every single program that you talk to when the year starts approaching, everyone's going to be like, I think we're really good. And it can start becoming cliche, but I agree with you completely in terms of just the overall roster, not just from a on paper standpoint, but also from a culture and who these players are as individuals, as young men. We're older than we've been, I think, in the past as well. It's going to really pay dividends, and we're extremely talented. Rags always emphasized size, truly having size at every single position. And I in many podcasts that he's done already, and every chance that he has, he lets our donors know that that's kind of been a focus. And when you look at our roster, that's really going to be the case. And even how deep we are, obviously you have your starting five, but I really think that it's interchangeable. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge advantage to have in collegiate athletics, and not to discredit teams of the past, but I think we're going to have the mobility to truly adjust to the game. Games are not always going to go as planned, and when you can kind of pull on different skill sets and different players during the game, whatever it is that you need, and those guys are bought into what you're trying to do, you can really do some special things. And I think that right now our team is really framed to be able to do that at a high level in a league like the NBC.
Well, Joel, anything else you'd like to add with your new responsibility as GM, or just stuff that you've accomplished here in this first year?
You know, I think at the end of the day, not that I was sold on this place before I got here, because that's not the point, but everything that I thought this place would be, it's been that and more. Mm. From a staffing standpoint, whether it's a GM role or there's my exec role, and really for the fans, you know, they really care. And I think that goes a long way when people authentically care about the success of a program, multiple programs that we have here. And I think it's an exciting time to be in Purple Ace, honestly. We say that all the time. We've had great accomplishments, what baseball did, what soccer did last year. But I really think just overall, this is a really, really good time to be supporting our initiatives and our student athletes. And that's not to say we've done enough. We always need more. We're always open to people stepping up and helping us, especially financially at this time. But more than that, you know, just being in the stands goes a long way. And that's really the goal this year, is to kind of help that ROI for our fans, where, you know, they put so much time and effort into supporting us. Well, let's go ahead and try and continue to push this forward and do some special things. I think we can this year.
All right, Joel, thanks for your time and best luck in year two.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Coming up next in segment two, we'll hear from Kai Bates Diop, the graduate assistant sport performance coach, here on episode 43 of Aces on the Air. Kai, thanks for joining us here this week on Aces on the Air. And welcome to Evans. I know you've been here for a little bit. What's the experience been like for you in a short time?
Yeah, no, thank you for that. It's been great to be here so far. And, you know, we hit the ground running when I came here at the beginning of June with our off-season training with men's basketball. So I've been learning a lot and having lots of fun. But overall, it's been an exceptional experience.
I mentioned your title, Graduate Assistant Sport Performance Coach. And I think fans probably have an idea of what all that entails. But just kind of take us through what your role is with this group and what a typical day looks like for you.
Yeah, so my role as a graduate assistant sports performance coach is to really work to prepare these student athletes for the rigors of the ups and downs of their, you know, collegiate basketball season, really from a lot of different angles, from a holistic approach. So there's a physical approach of making sure that they're strong enough and they not only look strong, but they can move in efficient ways on the court that are really specific to the sport of basketball, but then also helping them out from a mental standpoint of, you know, looking at and understanding what they're getting into from a time management perspective, a motivation and competitive energy perspective. So that's a day-to-day conversation that we like to try to work out of both buckets in terms of, we want to prepare you physically from a conditioning standpoint as well, a cardiovascular standpoint, getting up and down the court at an efficient rate, and also being able to have those conversations about what is all to come and how we can manage that on a day-to-day level within ourselves. Typical day for me, I have a couple of other teams I work with here, and then there were a few more teams I picked up just in our transitionary period as a sports performance staff here. But with the average teams that I work with here, it typically starts around 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. with a session with either track or golf. All my sessions with those teams go for about an hour. Mm-hmm. And so I'll have a session at 6, a session at 7. Typically get some type of break to where I'll work out usually, go check in with Coach Raglan and talk about the day-to-day there and kind of zoom out and see how the guys are progressing in terms of their strength and conditioning. I'll likely take a walk around the Evansville area, maybe walk on the treadmill in the Carson Fitness Center, listen to a podcast here or there, get some food, and then right around once 1:30, 2 p.m. rolls around, that's when practice is about to start for the guys. So then that's me gathering whatever I want to have for their warm-up that day. Maybe I'll have some bands out there to get them warmed up, or some pads, or I'll make sure I bring my whistle or a stopwatch, just depending on what the focus is that day, and then get those guys warmed up and ready to go for practice. And that's really a, you know, a head-to-toe warm-up, making sure all those muscles are fired up, ready to go, and they're prepared to work at a really high level throughout practice. So there's not, you know, oh, it takes the first 10-15 minutes to get warmed up in practice. It's like, no, once we get to that first drill, guys are ready to go, and then we get throughout the rest of practice. And we're on a model right now that we lift after practice. So then usually between 15 to 20 minutes after practice ends, we head over to the weight room, and then that's when we get stronger and finish up the day around 6 usually. I'll kind of see if there's anything else going on in the facility, sport team-wise, just to kind of poke my head in and, you know, just kind of say what's up. And then after that, go home, eat a little bit of dinner, get some rest, and do it all over the next day.
I say it sounds like a full day.
Yes, indeed.
You know, you have the performance coach title, and people think, okay, you put him through workouts and the physical side of it. And what gets talked more about these days, the mental side. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, what all goes into that from your role as far as, you know, mental health or preparing them for the mental aspect of the game? Just take us through kind of what you do with that.
Yeah, that's just an ongoing conversation I have with pretty much all the guys as much as I can. One formal thing I've done this year is just speaking to them about, you know, with this upcoming season, what are some habits that you want to have solidified? Just as a men's basketball program, really big about talking about habits and understanding the power of a habit, the power of a routine, the power of consistency, really. Mm-hmm. And that's going to really help you out, I think, especially in basketball, but really in life. There's going to be ups and downs, things outside of your control. So I think expressing to the age group of 18 or 19 to 24, 25 year old, it's really important to, hey guys, like, we know that this season is going to be an up and down season. There's going to be, we have some high expectations. Like, what habits do we want to build now while we have the time and the power to, so that once, you know, late October, early November comes around, we can look at it and say, okay, I know I've stacked a lot of days doing this because it was in my control outside of anything external. So that's been a big focus, is just really narrowing down those habits and making sure that our actions are lining up with our words that we're speaking.
I know you completed your master's at UIC this past May, and you went to school at Butler as well. That's where you got your college career started. Just take us through kind of your experience the last several years before coming to Evansville.
Yeah, so I did my undergrad at Butler University. Mm-hmm. So I was there working with the men's basketball team as a student manager. And I came into that role as I became interested in coaching from a instance in high school where I had to essentially kind of sideline myself as an athlete. I had a heart condition that I didn't know about, so I had to essentially decondition myself, and that was what made me more interested in coaching. I learned about the manager position, and I thought, hey, that'd be pretty cool to still, you know, be a part of a college program. And that's the cool thing about the manager GA position. You may not be on the team of players, but you're an integral part of the program and helping the program run. So I did that for 4 years at Butler. That's when me and Coach David Ragland ran into each other for a year and some change while he was an assistant coach there while I was a junior there, and then had a good relationship there, you know, worked hard. I definitely helped out with a lot of stuff like on court for some of his individual workouts he would do, and throughout practice, you know, I was an asset, I like to say, for all aspects of practice. Finished up December of 2022 at Butler, and then I started my master's studies at UIC in fall of 2023. So I graduated early from Butler, but then I stayed on there to finish out my time working with the men's basketball program, getting my graduate certificate in strategic communication. That took me throughout spring 2023, started my master's in kinesiology with a sports psychology emphasis at University of Illinois Chicago, fall of 2023. That was a great 2 years in Chicago there. And then, yeah, I finished up at UIC earlier this past spring, fall or spring of 2025. Yeah.
You answered my next question in terms of what connection brought you to Evansville. That is Coach Ragland. And Coach Ragland is known for his relationships with players and coaches. And from your experience at Butler and now in a short time here at Evansville, what do you enjoy most about working with Coach Ragland and also his staff?
Yeah, he's just a consistent professional within this business. You know, how he is now is really how he was at Butler. It's just different responsibilities and different contexts. But he's somebody that's going to set the standard with his energy, his presence. And whether you're wanting to be a manager, a coach, a strength coach, sports scientists, if you're around people like that, they elevate the way in which you operate in whatever space you're trying to excel in, really. So he's just somebody that is really easy to learn from, very, very approachable, very outgoing. But when it comes down to the work, he's very calculated and understands how to put a plan together and execute it on a day-to-day basis.
You grew up in the normal Illinois area, which Aces fans are familiar with in terms of Illinois State University.
Right. Yeah.
Just tell us, what was life growing up for you? I know you're involved in sports a lot. Just what was life like for you?
Yeah, so I grew up in Bloomington, Illinois. Great upbringing, honestly, great family. My dad worked at State Farm for 35 years before he retired. Mom was a stay-at-home mom for a little bit, but then she did a lot of work with philanthropy and worked at Illinois State, actually, as a, I'll say, a major gifts officer, kind of like we have here with Kelly Gates. And really great upbringing. Came from an active basketball family in terms of my dad playing in college, my mom doing track and field in high school, went to high school at University High School, which is essentially a lab school for everybody that wants to go into education at Illinois State. They get a chance to teach a class or two. So I had a really great upbringing throughout high school, played basketball, as I mentioned earlier, had to take a step back for like a heart condition I didn't know about. So that was something that really was a defining point of my life as a high schooler. It was a situation where, you know, I'd go into cardiac arrest, didn't have a pulse, you know, they do CPR, AED on me, the whole thing. And it was one of those things that just gave me a great gift of perspective as I've grown up, because things could have been worse. So now that I just kind of keep that in mind of like, hey, you had a pretty great upbringing, 16 years of pretty normal, uninterrupted life, you know, bumps and bruises here and there. But then it was the moment of being in that hospital, seeing, oh, okay, there's 3 and 4 year olds that like haven't been able to leave the hospital quite yet. So you should, you know, understand that you have a great gift of perspective now, and that things can always be a little bit worse than what you think they can. So you might as well attack every day, you know, with that in mind. Yeah. But great upbringing. Lots of love for Bloomington.
Yeah, that unfortunate event you mentioned, February 2017, you suffered cardiac arrest. And were you, what grade were you in high school?
So I was a sophomore, 16 years old.
Yeah, did that happen? Was it at practice, at a game?
Yeah, so it was a practice, routine practice. We were starting off with, I think it was, I believe, a 3-on-2-on-1 drill. So early in the practice, so I shouldn't have felt the way I did at the time. But I remember coming off one of the rotations and my heart was beating really fast. And I said to one of my teammates, you know, my heart hurts. In that exact moment, I pass out, I collapse to the floor, and then my teammate that I said that to, you know, runs out and grabs our athletic trainer. They come in, and in the time that they're doing CPR, which is about 4 to 4.5 minutes, was when the time I didn't have a pulse, so they're operating CPR. They get the AED set up, hit me with the first shock. I come to, I'm lying on the gym floor, very, you know, dazed and confused, and then the process from there was, they airlifted me to a hospital in Peoria, spent a week there. That was when they told me I have hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And all that is exaggerated like heart thickness. And as athletes, you typically have a little bit of a thicker heart than the sedentary person. So I had an exaggerated case of that. So blood wasn't pumping out of my heart to get to my brain. And so that's why I collapsed. That's when they tell me, you know, hey, this is a very serious thing. We need you to really take your physical activity levels down quite a bit. At that time, you know, I was on the path of looking like I'm going to play college basketball. I'm going on visits, things of that nature. But that, you know, trumped all that type of activity, really, because it was like, hey, this is my life we're talking about. So that was when I had to decondition myself, kind of take a step back. But it was in that taking that step back that I was able to really learn a lot about my environment and really just about life, you know, how fragile life is. So it was a experience that was very, very hard as a high schooler, but it definitely shaped who the person that I am today.
Your brother, Cato, was playing at Ohio State at the time, and I saw the clip they did on you and your family on the Big Ten Network. Yep. And I know that moment, you know, I'm sure it was traumatic for you and your family, but it seemed like it was a moment that brought you and your brother even closer together.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, my brother was a big inspiration to me. He was somebody that really just conducted himself as a high level. He just retired from the NBA mm-hmm. after about 6 years, close to probably a month at this point ago. And, you know, a big thing about our relationship was that at the time, he unfortunately like hadn't had the opportunity to come see me play like as a high schooler, because I mean, he's on a Big Ten schedule, he's booked, you know, early morning to late nights. But it was the fact that he was able to still play and me watch him, and I mean, that's my best friend. Like, we talk, you know, pretty much every day, and we're going through similar phases of life right now, and that he's finishing up basketball and going into his next endeavors, and so he's dealing with some of the stuff I was dealing with as a 16-year-old. So it's kind of like a full circle moment in that sense of everybody that's playing sport, you know, that ball has to stop bouncing at some point. Mm-hmm. And it's about those habits and those processes of consistency that really help you progress to where you can be bigger than that sport that you just played. So that's a really big, you know, component of our relationship.
Now, you guys, you did some camps together, right?
Oh, yes. And that's another big thing that kind of grew from my cardiac arrest, was that in the process of me recovering, my family and I learned that it's a state mandate, but it's an unfunded mandate in the state of Illinois for parks, gyms, schools to have AEDs. And so we thought that, you know, if there's something that we can do to change that, we might as well try our best to do that. So I think we've been able to fundraise for over 10 AEDs since 2017 in the state of Illinois. And that's been a big part of the reason why we do these, you know, skills camps in the summer, free of charge, show up, get some good skills and drills from Kaita and me. And that's just been a beautiful part of it all, just to be able to connect to the youth and also know that there's a big purpose here and that everybody that is within this space of athletics, fitness, deserves that second chance like I did.
Again, I'm sure it was extremely traumatic and took a little bit to probably get over. You're disappointed, hey, I had my basketball career in a way taken away from me. But do you feel like now, kind of looking back over the last, 8 years with your journey, that you have a bigger purpose, or I don't want to say more meaningful purpose, but outside of just playing the game of basketball?
Yeah, that's something I've been really able to articulate and understand. It was very much of that woe is me attitude. And it was just very hard. Like, as a 16-year-old, you're not ready for that type of, you know, come to reality type of moment, but it all has kind of made sense. And I don't think it could have turned out better for me than how it currently did. I mean, I have the opportunity now to train Division I athletes on a day-to-day basis and provide that service and not only teach exercise, but be within the space that I was, you know, really wanting to be in as a 16-year-old now, in a way that I can really express myself, like, and I know I'm being my true and full self. So it's been a journey of the past 8 years. Even just you saying that kind of took me back, like, wow, it has been 8 years. Yeah. But yeah, it's been a beautiful journey, and I just have nothing but gratitude and appreciation for, like, all the steps and all the people I've met along the way that have helped me kind of shape into this, to be able to say, yeah, I think sports performance is the way to go.
We hope you're in Evansville for a while, but yeah. but we know, you know, things change, you take different jobs and whatnot, but what is the end goal for you career-wise? Do you have, like, a certain thing set in mind?
Yeah, there's some things that I would love to do. I would love to really operate at the college level as long as I can, eventually work to become a director of sports performance somewhere, working with, you know, men's basketball as a primary sport. And then if I'm at the college level for a while and I want to shift gears, I do think about working in the professional ranks. Or I think something that would be really cool, regardless if I do professional or stay in the college ranks, would be to open up my own, like, private sector space and really have, like, a one-stop shop for all things physical, you know, conditioning, and then mental as well, just for people to come in and really just grow, you know, as soon as they step through that door. But that's something I would love to see myself do one day.
All right, you've been with this group now for about 4 months. Season is a few weeks away. Let us just fans know your opinion of this group. What do you like about them so far?
Yeah, you know, they're a hardworking group. They're a group that's going to come out with some energy and with a sense of urgency. It's been a big thing that we've been working to instill over the summer, not only in the weight room, but in the court. They're a dynamic group. They really get along well with each other. They have great chemistry. And I'm just really excited to see them up against some good competition, and so that Aces fans can see, you know, what we've been working on and the steps that we're taking as a program to, outside of wins and losses, to promote this program in a way that's going to attract people that really want to be a part of something bigger than themselves.
Well, Kai, you have a tremendous story. We're happy to have you here in Evansville. Thanks for your time, and enjoy the season.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Episode 43 of Aces on the Air continues our behind-the-scenes look with men's basketball, and our third guest this week is the men's basketball head manager, Matthew Bunnell, a very familiar name throughout the Evansville Tri-State area when it comes to sports. Went to Evansville North High School, played basketball and baseball there. His dad was a former high school boys basketball coach there as well, and he has been great with the Aces program the last, this is your third year, hard to believe, it's gone very quick, and does so much for the program and the people involved. And Matt, thanks for joining us this week. It's hard to believe this is your senior year overall, right? But third year with the program.
Yeah, no, it's, I was having a conversation with someone just the other day that, you know, it seems like just the other day we were down in Daytona Beach for the CVI.
Yeah.
It just seems like that was a few days ago, but in reality, that's a couple years now, you know? But yeah, it's flown by. It's been great. I've enjoyed every minute of it, and I wouldn't have changed the past couple years or my experiences that I've had here at UE.
Mentioned you grew up in the area. You played JUCO baseball away for a year and then decided to come back, go to UE. How did the connection start that you got involved with the program and just how that all developed?
Yeah, so it's actually kind of a funny story. Like you said, I played junior college baseball for a year. Always knew that college basketball, the coaching side, was something that I wanted to try to do. That was always a kind of a career goal of mine, what I saw in my future. And so I played baseball for a year, loved it. It was a great experience. Decided that it was time to move on and try to become a student manager for a program. Worked out that I ended up working camp for UE the summer after my freshman year at Danville. Worked camp, had a great conversation with Coach Ragland, and he was basically like, you need to come do it here. And ever since that, I went home, thought about it for about a day, and I was like, this is what I need to do.
Yeah, so this is a popular path, you know, for guys that don't play college basketball to get into coaching and stick around. When I say head manager, that's almost all duties assigned, right? You have a lot of different responsibilities. So the best you can, take Aces fans through what all you are responsible for.
It's a lot. nothing glamorous or anything like that, but essentially everything that goes on that you don't see, I'm pretty involved in. And at least if I'm not totally in charge of something, I'm at least, I have my hand on a certain component, whether it's travel or stuff like that. But no, I think today, for example, you know, we have practice, so I've got to get in before my class, make sure all the laundry's good to go, right? Make sure the guys have their gear, went to class, and then got to go get the gym ready, get everything, get the floor swept, make sure everybody, all the towels are out, water's good, everything like that. Go over the practice plan, see what needs to be done for that day. Make sure the managers, the rest of our managerial staff knows, okay, this is what we're doing in practice today, you know. And then once we get into the season, I take care of a lot of the food for the team. So that takes up a lot of time, organizing 30 people on the road, trying to get meals all the time. So that takes up some time as well. But yeah, it's a lot of catering to the players. And I say that in a positive way. Like, I enjoy doing that, right? Like, we always say as a manager, the best thing, the best outcome of a situation is when nothing out of the ordinary happens. Yeah. Like, you don't want any recognition, you don't want anything, because that means everything's just going right, going smooth. So yeah, it's not glamorous by any means, but it's definitely important for the program, I think, and I take a lot of pride in that.
I mentioned you're a senior here at the University of Evansville. So away from the basketball program, what are you studying?
So I am a business major, double majoring in marketing and management.
So a lot of information being crammed into your mind here in a 3-4 year span, from academics to also with the program. And I mentioned your dad, former high school basketball coach at North High School. He also does some analyst work at Ball State with basketball on the radio side. And I'm sure, you know, his background and growing up with him got you interested in this. But how much you're able to pick up just in terms of coaching and learn from this staff, while, you know, your responsibility is other things outside of coaching the players, but how much you're able to pick up, you know, just being around them?
Yeah, so I have learned an astronomical amount about the game of basketball just over the past 2+ years now from the staff. You know, as you can imagine, growing up with a dad who coached at the high school level, the Division I level, and that's all you've known, right? Like, that's all I'm around. So you pick up a lot of things growing up and you learn a lot naturally. But then it's really been awesome for me just truly being a part now of a Division I program and getting to learn from not only Coach Ragland, but from Coach Snow, Coach Swanson, all the assistants. You know, like, there's pieces of information that I'm able to take personally and learn from, essentially. And I don't say this lightly, like, I don't think I would want to be around a different coaching staff every day. Mm-hmm. And getting to work for and under such great people, and it's really been a great learning process for me the past 2 years.
What is the relationship like with you and your dad, Scott? I mean, I'm sure the majority of the conversation is basketball. I mean, do you talk about a lot of the games, break the games down? What are those conversations like between you two?
Yeah, we do. He does a really good job of kind of keeping the two separate, if that makes sense. Like, he's always in dialogue. Like, we're always in dialogue, and he's always talking about what he sees and or whatever, but it's never, he just does a good job of kind of keeping a distance and just kind of observing to an extent.
So what the goal for you is, the goal to become eventually maybe a college head coach? Do you want to coach high school like your dad? What's kind of the end goal for you, think?
Yeah. I would like to coach college basketball. That's my goal. Mm-hmm. That's what I would like to do. Obviously, it's not a profession where you can just say you want to do that and do it.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of pieces that would have to fall into place, but I certainly, coaching at the collegiate level is something, that's the goal that I have after I graduate.
All right, take me through a game day for you. Let's go on the road, because you mentioned you're in charge of getting the meals, and, you know, I travel with the team. I go to shoot around for the majority of the games, and on the road, I'll see you'll be kind of the number of chairs on the sidelines, making sure, I don't know, I guess Coach Ragland's chair is the correct one. You look at, you know, the timeout situation, getting chairs out for the players. There's a lot of little things I think the average fan wouldn't even think about. So, road game, what is the typical routine like for you when you get to a gym that you're not familiar with?
Yeah, so if I went through my entire game day, we could be here for about 2 hours, so I won't do that. But yeah, so obviously we have shoot around in the morning. We'll have breakfast, lunch, maybe, depending on what time the game is. But once we get to the arena, I've gotten a pretty good routine down. Like, it took me a little bit to kind of figure out the best process, best routine. But pretty much first thing, get everything in the locker room, make sure the guys are ready to get on the court, get stretched, get ready to go. But then it's setting everything up, setting up snacks, setting up energy drinks, not energy drinks, but like energy chewy, mm-hmm. yep. little energy chews, fruit snacks, stuff like that. And then once that's all good, head out to the court, make sure tape off certain chairs for the coaches so it's easier. I know that sounds very tedious, but tape certain chairs just so it's easier for coaches after a timeout. They come back to the bench, know where to sit. We always, as I always put in front of you every game, have our little dishes of gum, yep. candy for the coaches and the players. But yeah, it's a lot of walking back and forth from the locker room, the court, setting stuff up, making sure everything's in line, ready to go for the game.
With myself being a high school official, I like to track college referees. And one of the things you do is actually you tape the three referees from yep. the face and name right next to me in the bench. The coaches can yeah. know. And yeah, just a lot of things that fans would never even think about. Yeah. You have to take care of it. And like you said, when everything goes well, you don't get any recognition for you. And again, you do things that people don't even know about.
Yeah.
All right. So what is your favorite part of the job? If you could pinpoint one thing, hey, I wake up, I get to do this. What do you enjoy most about it?
I know this might sound corny, but it truly, my favorite part is walking into like the gym. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I get to do every day. Like, I feel blessed to have the opportunity to do this every day, and the feeling just kind of entering the facility or the gym, whatever, it's a rejuvenating feeling. Just yeah. whether it's a full gym or an empty gym, it's very cool every day to just walk in there.
All right, so on the flip side, what is the most stressful part of the job for you, that when you go to bed you lose some sleep thinking about this? If this goes wrong, man, I'm gonna be in trouble.
My biggest most stressful part is the post-game meal when we're on the road, because I'm the only student manager that travels. Yep. So I'm sitting on the bench trying to coordinate the delivery of food, and then I'm making sure it's there on time, delivered to the right spot, all while the game's going on and it's late in the second half normally, right? Yep. So I would say that's definitely the most stressful part of my job.
And it's tough you've got, 20, 25 people that travel, a bunch of different personalities. Yeah. They want certain things. So trying to manage all that, I'm sure, is very difficult. Is there a story that comes to mind on the road where, hey, it was very chaotic, but you got through it, or maybe something went wrong that wasn't too serious but it affected things? Is there one kind of core memory in your time here that stands out? So one story that comes to mind just from a road game, I've told this on the air to Coach's Show before, and this was before you got here. It was Coach Ragland's first year, very first game. We're going to Miami, Ohio. It's the day of the game. We all get on the bus. We're going to shoot around, and the bus driver hit the curb and got a flat tire. And so, we were going to be sitting there for a couple hours before they could get another bus or fix the tire or whatever. And then we're heading shoot around. So this is Coach Ragland's first game, and we ended up having to basically order six or seven different Ubers and carpool to the arena. Some people that didn't need to be there went back to the hotel. Like, things like that comes up and people know nothing about. So anything else, come to mind?
One that definitely comes to mind. So my first year, so it would have been 2 years ago now, beat Illinois State game one in St. Louis. And I remember they told us they were providing meals after the game, and the meal wasn't necessarily as much yeah. as was anticipated. So for the next hour and a half, I think I probably had 50 calls made on my phone log. I was driving around St. Louis trying to go to pizza places. And then once we finally get all the food figured out, we're sitting in the in our meeting space going over itinerary, because you just won, right? Yeah. And you're looking at the schedule for the next day and how you want to go about it. So that's another example of stuff you don't see. Like, we win in St. Louis against Illinois State. For the next 5 hours, I am boom, 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 nonstop.
Yeah.
So that's a story that comes to mind, or an example of kind of a tougher part of the job.
Yeah, I think planning for food would be extremely stressful. When I worked in minor league baseball, I didn't have to do food for the players, but we would do basically hotel room assignments. And then on getaway day, you'd have to pick four or five rooms, and everyone had to move into those. And the guys that didn't have the getaway rooms would be mad at you because you didn't pick their room. And yeah, there's a lot of different egos that you have to manage.
Yeah,
so
it's definitely tough.
No, we appreciate what you do. And I will say, you know, being in a support staff role and not always being with the team, but the majority of the time, you know, you guys think about everybody that's on the roster. Nobody gets left out, and you guys are absolutely wonderful to work with. All right, I've been kind of ending some of these segments with our behind-the-scenes people with your thoughts on the team. And again, this is your third year, fourth year for Coach Ragland. I know in my experience, this is my eighth year calling the games, this is the most excited I've been about in terms of just how the roster's been constructed with talent, experience. They seem to have the right pieces. So you're around them every day, every practice. What are your thoughts on this year's group?
Very mature in the best way, in the best sense of the word mature. Like, everybody seems very process-driven, very focused on one goal. And yeah, the level of maturity, not that it hasn't been high in the past, but it's just almost on another level. And that comes with, you know, having some older guys. Another thing that I think is a very positive thing is, you know, you bring back two starting big men in Josh and Connor, which that's not a common thing nowadays, you know, especially at the mid-major level. So kind of having that foundation and then adding some pieces around that it's definitely very exciting heading into the season.
Well, Matt, thanks for your time. We truly appreciate all that you do for us and the program, and best luck with this upcoming year and hopefully many Aces victories.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. It was fun.
And we finish up with Brandon Walls, the Director of Creative Content here at the University of Evansville, a heavy focus with men's basketball, and he is the man that puts out all the videos on X, Instagram. You see his videos pregame, before the introductions, postgame recaps, you name it. He is the man behind the scenes. And Brandon, thanks for joining us here on Aces on the Air. And
first off, thank you for having me, Jevin. It's such an honor.
It is, hard to believe year four. And how'd you get connected with the team? I know you went to school here as a freshman and got involved with the team. And we first met each other. It was actually on the road in St. Louis, yes. Coach Ragland's first year. And how'd you get connected with the team?
Yeah, so that's actually a little bit of a story there. So I was actually getting involved with the Crescent. It is the school kind of magazine. And out there, I was in the offices, and Coach Sammy just happened to be on a stroll, and he came in there looking for somebody to start doing some media, and I met him, and next day I was at the first practice.
Before you came to the University of Evansville, how much, you know, video experience did you have, or has this kind of been a learn on the fly, you know, type of responsibility for you?
There was a lot of learn on the fly. I definitely oversold myself. I acted like I was way more qualified than I actually was. There was a lot of baptism by fire. There was a lot of mess ups, and there was a lot of growing. But yeah.
Do you ever look back to video year one and kind of cringe what you put together?
I think that about stuff I made a month ago. So yeah, all the time.
So again, we see the finished product with the videos and stuff, but just kind of take us through what a typical day is like for you, because you have the school aspect, you're getting your master's, you're around practice a lot, you're taking pictures, filming, just kind of what all goes into a typical day for you.
Yeah. So typically I wake up, and I get right to editing. So I have a visual impairment, and in the morning is when my eyes are the best. So that's when I like to get into more of my creative work right out of the gate. Whenever I just take advantage of when I can see the best during the day. And then I go to practice. That's typically around 2 o'clock ish. Go over there, go to warm up, go to practice, and then they lift afterwards, go to that. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, edit after that.
Yeah, and again, your
lots
work
of editing.
Yeah, your work is a lot more than what the fans end up seeing, right? Because
yes.
I'm sure they see some of the social media stuff. Obviously, they come to the games, they see the pregame hype video before they introduce the team. But you're also helping players with their mixes for their social
yes.
media role. You're taking pictures. I mean, you're helping me out as well with kind of this podcast stuff, getting pictures of players and my guests. So there's a lot more that goes into it than just the videos that people see.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a lot of my job is just sending stuff to different people. Yeah. And if you look at my phone, I think I have 600 missed text messages that I haven't responded to. I'm constantly getting my phone blown up trying to get content sent out, so that's a lot of it too. And yeah, the behind the scenes editing takes a long time. For one intro video, it takes me about 15 hours of editing to put that together. So I mean, yeah, lots of late nights,
Yeah, and one thing I mentioned that you do is the game recap video. So after the Aces pick up a win, typically the next day on the team account, we'll put out kind of a 2 to 3 minute, you know, highlight of the game, some behind the scenes footage. You know, we incorporate the radio calls and whatnot. How long does something like that take? So we need a quick turnaround, right, for the next day. How long does that take?
Yeah, so those are quick. So typically what happens is I start editing like right away. We're downloading the clips. I'm figuring out what clips I'm gonna use, and I'm trying to guess also what clips you probably have a good call for. So
none of them. I never have a good call.
So. Yeah. So I'm trying to predict stuff like that, so that whenever I get the calls from you, typically in the next morning, sometimes that night, I can already have my part done, and it's time to slap your stuff over top of it, and then we're ready to go.
And that's the thing. Like, you have to go into it with somewhat of a game plan. It's not just, hey, let's just film the game, and now I'm going to figure out what I'm doing for the video. You're kind of going in with the game plan before the game, right?
Yeah, I film every game as if we won. Mm-hmm. So I prep for a win every game, and it's honestly, I have confidence they're going to win every game. Yeah. I'm a big fan, so yeah.
What is your favorite part of the job?
To be honest, it may sound cheesy, but it's been watching a lot of the returning guys just grow. Mm-hmm. And from year to year, you know, today's game, there's not a lot of returners all the time, but the ones that have stuck around and we've gotten to see for multiple years, that's honestly been my favorite part.
All right. Give me the most stressful part of the job.
Oh, God. The most stressful part is it's the best part, and it's the most stressful part. It's as soon as we win, the belt celebration, it's exciting in the locker room, and then instantly, okay, we have a lot of work to do. I got to let everybody know we won. We got to get the graphic out. We got to get the post out. We got the players all want stuff, and it's time to start working on that recap.
Yeah. I get this sometimes, too, from the radio side. Like, if you're piecing together highlights, and even working with you to try to get that quick turnaround, it's kind of an adrenaline rush, especially after a big win.
Yeah. You know, it's a mixture of, you know, exciting and scary. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
I really thought you were going to say the most stressful part is right before the intro video at home games. Look, Ford Center is great to work with. This is not a knock on anybody, but sometimes things just go wrong, right? It's technology. Yeah. I would think that has to be a little bit stressful.
Oh, I am always pacing, and I'm typically, like, hiding, like, kind of behind people. Yeah. And then as soon as I know it's, like, playing well, I walk up.
All right, so, yes, sometimes game days can be stressful for both of us. Mentioned the technology aspect of things. And from the radio side, I got to make sure everything works right with equipment, connecting with the station. You're the same way at home games with the videos. But sometimes on the road, things come up. And the running joke with Brandon is he typically forgets something along the way, whether it be a credential, whether it be his hotel room card, anything. And there was actually a game last year, Brandon. We were at Indiana State, and I'm getting all set up for the game, and we're about, what, I don't know, hour and a half from tip-off, and you look like a lost puppy. You stand right in front of me at the broadcast table, and, you forgot your SD card?
Yeah, literally, if I don't have that, nothing else works.
Yeah.
And I didn't have it. And I was so scared to go to Jevin. I knew he drove separately, so yeah. I knew he had a car and he could take me back to the hotel. But I also know, you know, what he does, you have to lock in. You can't just walk up and just start a game. And I was gonna go interrupt Jevin before he got on the air, and that's not okay. Yeah. So I was very nervous walking up to ask you to help me out. But yeah.
So it was probably about an hour before tip, which is about 30 minutes before I start my pregame show, right? I just talked to Coach Ragland back in my seat, and I was in pretty good shape. I was ready to go. Didn't really have much else to do. And I will say that day, I don't remember specifically what it was, but I was not in like a great mood. It had nothing to do with the team. It was just kind of a personal life thing. Just was not in a good mood. And you asked me the question, and I'll be honest with you, I was like, okay, be nice to Brandon. Don't take out your personal stuff on Brandon. Yes, let's go to the hotel real quick. So we ran and got back, I think, 10 minutes before I went on the air, and all was good. But, we help each other out. Things like that happens. And,
fun.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to, whenever you say forgetting things, I thought you were going to talk about, I think, two times this last season, I left my bag, and we had to ship it back from the hotel.
Yep.
You and I think maybe it was Utah the year before. Yep. We had to ship back my bag.
Yeah, I always do a double check to make sure Brandon leave his camera or something, keys, wallet.
Yeah, that's rough.
You're good for once or twice you lose your credential, so that's always a given. But no, we appreciate what you do, so always here to help out.
Yep.
So you mentioned, you know, and what makes this even more impressive as far as your story is you have some vision impairment.
Yes.
And I've known you now for basically 4 years. You try to explain it to me, and I don't understand it fully still, but I just kind of take fans through, you know, what you kind of battle on a daily basis.
Yeah, so I have what's called Stargardt's. It is a hereditary issue. And basically, I have my peripheral vision, but I don't have my central vision. There's just like a hole in the middle of my vision. Long story short, that's what I see.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do you adjust? Because to me, it would make it hard to not only edit video, but do coursework and just kind of do some day-to-day things.
Yeah. So I do a lot of things very differently, a lot of things very backwards. But the great people at, Voke Rehab and Association for the Blind here in Evansville have helped me out a lot with different technology, different glasses that have helped me. It's still not the same, but, I'm very appreciative for that. So that goes a long way.
Is that something you've always had throughout your entire life, or has it gotten progressively worse the last few years?
Yeah. So whenever I was in seventh grade is whenever we first figured out I had an issue. I didn't know what the issue was, though. And then about 2 years ago, I got my diagnosis. And that was also whenever I had the most dramatic drop-off of vision. So that's a lot of adapting in that area.
And I know, like, in terms of driving, during the day, you're okay to drive right on?
No.
No, you're not?
No.
So you don't drive anymore?
So, well, this, Jevin, this is a question right here.
Do you just hop in the car and pray, or what goes on here?
So, yes, there is a little bit of prayers involved, but there's a little bit of guesswork. But you pick up cues, right? So there's this thing called road braille. It's the rumble strip on the side of the road. You ever get lost, don't know where you're at, you just kind of veer to the right a little bit, you feel that rumble strip, and now you know where you're at. But on a serious note, I'm actually going through training right now for bioptic glasses. And they're basically glasses that have telescopes on it. So okay. I currently hold a license. I don't think I should, though, but I currently do hold it. But I'm going to lose it in like 2 months, and that's when my training starts for these glasses.
Okay. Now I know why I always drive when we go places. So, yep.
Yep. Yes. Yes.
You grew up in the area. You went to Boonville High School.
Yes.
I know your parents live in Boonville, Indiana, and you were heavily involved in sports growing up. You were a three-sport athlete in high school, basketball, baseball, and tennis. So sports has always been important to you, right?
Yep. Yeah, I've always enjoyed sports, and it just kind of was an easy transition to staying in the gym every day.
I mentioned you've been here at the University of Evansville since you were a freshman, and what made you want to, basically stay close to home? I'm sure the vision thing had something to do with it as well, but what have you kind of enjoyed about being close to home, being here at UV?
I've actually really enjoyed my time here at UV. I originally came here to run track. Mm-hmm. That didn't work out. I just kind of didn't show up to anything. And then I actually did not like U of E at all my freshman year. Mm-hmm. And was going to transfer out to IU, but my sophomore year I just kind of fell in love with the place. A lot of my professors, they're very hands-on with me, and they helped me grow. And yeah, I'm very fortunate for my experiences that I've had here.
So it was your sophomore year that you got connected with the team, right?
No, my junior year.
Junior year, okay.
Yep.
We're certainly glad that you did, and I know that in addition to this, well, first let's go into kind of the education side. You finished up your undergrad, you're going through your graduate program right now, so take us through kind of what that experience was like and what you studied.
Yeah, so everything's online. The master's is called Science and Leadership. A lot of us are in the same program, Coach Kai, KP, and Hemingway right now. Mm-hmm. I would say the name of it's a little misleading. I would say it's more of like a master's in management. Mm-hmm. That's been great. I'm actually looking to finish that up here in December.
You're a very busy guy. I mean, especially when basketball is in session with your responsibilities with that. You got school, and also understand this is, a little free promotion for you, but you film weddings also off the side, right?
I do. That's
That seems like it'd be a big production.
Well, they can be scary. Can't mess up. So we're talking about high stress, during the games. That first kiss, that's high stress during a wedding. But you get through it, and I enjoy doing weddings. They can be fun.
Yeah.
They can also be a rough day.
I understand the stressful part because some people don't know this, but I officiate weddings.
Yes.
Not that I'm actively trying to do them often, but I've done a handful with family and friends. And public speaking is something that's never really made me nervous or anything. But doing a wedding, there's a little bit of nerves because, again, you get one take at this. This is their most important day. And, I understand the stress with that. So what is kind of the end goal for you with your career? I mean, we hope to have you here with the basketball program for a while, but what would be kind of a dream job for you?
To be honest, I don't really know. So with my vision, it's kind of up in the air what's going to happen with it. So I probably do need to shift careers at some point. I just don't know what that will necessarily look like.
All right. Well, with all of our guests here behind the scenes, I've kind of finished up with a question about this year's basketball group. This is your fourth go around, and we've had a couple of good seasons since you've been on board as well, but a lot of experience with this group. I think a pretty good, you know, talented roster. What are your thoughts on this year's Purple Aces team?
I think these are the most competitive practices that I've been to. Mm-hmm. So they've been exciting to watch at practice, and I'm sure that'll correlate to on the court.
Anything major in the works this year in terms of videos, or pretty similar to how it's been in previous years?
My goal this year is to win the best in-house video. So I'm hoping. We didn't win it this last year, and I'm really going to go for it this year.
Well, Brandon, thanks for your time. Appreciate all the work that you do, and enjoy this upcoming season.
All right. Appreciate it, Devin.
That wraps up episode 43 of Aces on the Air, our men's basketball behind-the-scenes look. A big thanks to all of our guests. We had Joel Zimba on, the Executive Athletics Director for External Relations and also Men's Basketball General Manager. We talked to Kai Bates-Diop, Graduate Assistant, Sport Performance Coach. We also caught up with Matthew Bunnell, the Men's Basketball Head Manager, and as you just heard, Brandon Walls, Director of Creative Content. Coming up next week, we'll have a preview of the basketball season with my broadcast partner, the Hall of Famer Scott Treffler. That'll be episode 44. I'm Jevin Rebin. That wraps up episode 43 of Aces on the Air. As always, go Aces.